Good evening.
We are now calling to order the March 21st, 2023 rescheduled board meeting of the Santa Clarita Valley Water Agency Board of Directors. Move on to item two, the Pledge of Allegiance. Director Cawley, would you lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance, please?
Of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
President Martin, Vice President Wesorowski, and Director Cooper will be participating remotely per Government Code Section 54953 F2A, AB 2449, and the just cause exception. President Martin and Director Cooper are in the car and are on their way to the meeting from attending the KHTS Sacramento road trip and should be arriving shortly. Vice President Wesorowski is in Sacramento attending the AQUA 2023 Legislative Symposium. Per AB 2449, each attendee who participates remotely shall publicly disclose at the meeting before any action is taken whether any other individuals 18 years of age or older are present in the room at the remote location with the member and the general nature of the member's relationship with such individuals. President Martin and Director Cooper, are you in the car with anyone else other than the two of you?
Yes, Madam Secretary, this is President Martin. We are in the car with General Manager Matt Stone and Water Resource Manager Ali Hassan. Both
thank
Bill
you.
And I are in the same car.
Okay, thank you very much. Vice President Orzechowski, is there anyone in the room with you? And if so, please state the relationship to you.
Madam Secretary, I'm in a locked room. No one's there with me. I'm at a private residence of Mr. and Mrs. Martinez. They are my in-laws.
Thank you very much. A quick announcement before we continue. We do have five members of the board participating in person, and that is Director Armitage, Director Marks, Director Cawley, Director Peterson, and Director Bronstein. Also, please note, we will be adjourning the meeting tonight in memory of SCV Water Agency employee Ray Ramirez, who passed away last week. This meeting is being conducted in person at the Rio Vista Water Treatment Plant boardroom. As a convenience to the public, members of the public may also participate virtually by logging into the agency's Zoom meeting. And any member of the public may listen to the meeting or make comments to the board using the call-in number or Zoom webinar link. Because board members are participating remotely pursuant to AB 2449, in the event there is a disruption of service which prevents the agency from broadcasting the meeting to members of the public using either the call-in option or internet-based service, no action will be taken until the disruption is resolved. To participate in public comment from your computer, tablet, or smartphone, when we announce the agenda item you wish to speak on, click the raise hand feature in Zoom. You will be notified when it is your turn to speak. Please unmute when requested. To participate in public comment via phone, when we announce the agenda item you wish to speak on, dial star 9 to raise your hand. When it is your turn to speak, dial star 6 to unmute. If there's members of the public that are present, which I see there are, if there's any public comment, please note there are public comment cards outside. Please fill those out and return them to me so that we can keep order of public comment. The procedures for tonight's meeting are as follows. Each agenda item will be introduced, staff will present, public comments will be taken, then discussion and question from board members. Once concluded, we will ask for a motion in a second. After any further discussion, the board secretary will call for the roll call votes. All directors, again, are present for tonight's meeting except Vice President Gutzeit. I am now passing the meeting over to Vice President Wesorowski. Vice President Wesorowski, please continue with the meeting.
Thank you, Madam Secretary. Move on to item three, public comments. Members of the public may comment as to items within the subject matter of jurisdiction of the agency that are not on the agenda at this time. We ask that members of the public wishing to comment on items that are listed on this agenda do so at the time each item is considered. Madam Secretary, are there any public comments? Are there any public who wish to make a statement at this time?
It does not appear so.
Virtually and in person?
That is correct. No public comment at this time.
Understood. We move on to item number four, approval of the agenda. Are there any changes, additions, or modifications to the agenda?
I have none. Director Cooper not has
there are any changes. Oh, Director Crawley?
Pull 5.3 now or when we do?
When we get to consent calendar, yes. Vice President Lavosky, there is no changes to the agenda.
With no changes, the agenda is approved. Okay, we move on to item 5, consent calendar. There are 7 items on the consent calendar. Before we move on to directors, are there any public comments on any of the items 5.1 through 5.7 from the public?
There is not.
Virtually and in person, Madam Secretary?
That is correct.
Okay, directors, are there any items that you wish to pull?
Director Cawley has his hand up.
Yeah, I'd just like to pull 5.3, please.
5.3, noted. Directors, any other items that used to be pulled? Madam Secretary?
Does not appear so.
Okay. All right. In that case, is there a motion to approve 5.1, 5.2, 5.4, 5.5, 5.6, 5.7?
Director Marks makes that motion.
Is there a second?
Second by President Martin.
Okay. Madam Secretary, please call the roll on item 5.1, 5.2, 5.4, 5.5, 5.6, and 5.7.
As I call your name, please state how you vote. Director Armitage.
Yes.
Director Cawley.
Yes.
Director Peterson.
Yes.
Director Bronstein.
Yes.
Director Cooper.
Yes.
Director Marks.
Yes.
Vice President Ozohofsky.
Yes.
President Martin.
Yes.
Thank you. This item is approved, the consent calendar, excluding item 5.3. I will announce the resolution numbers in just a few moments. You may go ahead and continue on with item 5.3, Vice President Ozohofsky.
All right, move on to item 5.3. Mr. Cole, who will be presenting 5.3?
Courtney Mail, our chief engineer, will start off, and I believe he'll have some staff help him through it as well.
All right, Mr. Mayo, go ahead.
Thank you very much. We're actually going to have our right-of-way agent, Christina Jacob, present this agenda item, and we also have legal available for questions, and they will probably chime in on part of the presentation. So with that, Christina?
Yes. Hello. Good evening, President Martin and board members. As mentioned, my name is Christina Jacob, right-of-way agent here at SCV Water. And I'll just give April one moment to give the presentation. Thank you, April. So this evening, I bring before you an item seeking approval authorizing SCV Water to execute the agreement to settle real property rights between SCV Water and Woodside, and also the required CEQA finding of exemption. Next slide, please. The subject property is located south of the 14th Freeway between Lost Canyon Road and Sand Canyon Road. This map is Exhibit I in your packets for reference. Next slide, please. For its MetroWalk development, Woodside has entered into an agreement to purchase property that includes a portion of land on which SCV Water operates our Sand Canyon Pipeline project. The red outline on the left is the portion of the plan that impacts the real property. The aerial on the right shows the approximate location of our pipeline. While doing due diligence for the project, Woodside showed that property condemned to our predecessor in interest, CLWA, had items that needed clearing up. Eminent domain records showed that the recorded temporary construction easement had no self-executing termination date provision, and that it is unclear whether CLWA acquired an easement on the project property or its fee interest. Next slide, please. The eminent domain action was undertaken in 2006 by CLWA and its then counsel, McCormick, Kidman, and Barons LLP. Because a significant amount of time has passed since the eminent domain action was taken, and SCV Water does not have the records of CLWA relating to this eminent domain action, SCV Water was forced to obtain the all of the records from the court's stored files. SCV Water's current counsel, Best and Krieger, BBNK, completed a thorough review of the eminent domain documents that were obtained from the court files and was unable to determine whether CLWA obtained an easement or property and fee, as each document found had a different suggestion of the property rights acquired. So this slide shows some of the documents and their issues. So starting from the left, the resolution of necessity, which is also Exhibit C in your packets, showed a 40-foot wide easement, has a legal description named permanent easement, and a temporary construction easement for the project, which is no longer required because the project construction was completed. This is no issue to release. But moving on to the stipulation for entry of judgment, the green box in the middle, identifies parcels, but does not specify whether they are easement or fee. It does not clearly state this. And also references all property rights, which suggests fee, but the supporting documents suggest easement. This strongly implies that a fee interest was condemned because an easement cannot qualify as all property rights in the project property. And then it also implies that there was compensation, which you can see in your Exhibit E of your packet. The amended final order of condemnation, the original final order of condemnation that was filed, which you can see the relevant portion as Exhibit G in your packets, did not contain the relevant legal descriptions and was therefore amended to include them as exhibits, resulting in this amended final order. This resulting final order continues the ambiguity as to exactly what was acquired, suggesting that a fee interest was to be transferred to CLWA, but the legal map still identified a 40-foot wide easement. And then in the declaration of eminent domain counsel, Bradley D. Pierce of McCormick, Kimmon and Barons, submitted this document in support of the entry of judgment and the original final order, which you can see in your packets as Exhibit F. It unequivocally states that the eminent domain action involved the acquisition of a subterranean easement, which none of the other eminent domain documents contain a similar clear statement of the property rights that were to be acquired. So based on all of this, it cannot be said with certainty whether CLWA acquired an easement or a fee interest. If there is a dispute, the document that does identify and control the property rights is the resolution of necessity. Next slide, please. So working with BB&K, it was determined that SCV Water has three options for correction and establishing clear property rights. So starting at the top, the first option was to stand on the final order and argue that CLWA did indeed acquire a fee interest. This option appears to be at odds with what CLWA sought to acquire through that resolution of necessity and the complaint that was filed, and the clear declaration of its eminent domain counsel and how the property has and will be used by SCV Water, as SCV Water has not consistently declared its use of being that of the fee owner. This is also at odds with the fact that SCV Water presently seeks to acquire only easements for pipeline projects, as that is all that is generally required for their construction and operation. And this may result in litigation with Woodside and liability. So the second option in the middle is to file a lawsuit to modify the judgment and the final order to unequivocally state whether it has acquired an easement or a fee interest. So these documents can't be modified without a lawsuit because they were court orders. So this may result in litigation with Woodside and liability based on the amount of time that has passed and the modifications that are sought. So the third option is the best option, as this is where SCB Water can claim that it condemned the fee interest. So standing on that final order and condemning the fee interest in the project property and grant this fee interest to Woodside in exchange for an easement permitting the continued unaltered operation of the project. So this option is recommended, as I mentioned, because it would quickly clarify the rights of the parties. It would make Woodside whole in the property interests. It would provide easement rights permitting the continued unaltered operation of pipelines, which is a clarification of existing rights, and would also avoid agency liability. So authority should therefore be granted for agency execution of the proposed agreement settling real property rights by and between SCB Water and Woodside, which is attached in your packets as Exhibit H. Woodside is continuing its due diligence, and the legal descriptions may be updated as a result. This may only reduce but not increase the amount of property for which the fee interest would be granted. We will be using our standardized easement language, which we have worked with BB&K to update and use on all of our current easements. You can see that in Exhibit 2 of Exhibit H in your packets. And next slide, please. Thank you. The staff recommends that the agency execution of the agreement settling real property rights and the related TCE release and grant deed conveying the fee interest in the project property to Woodside in exchange for easement rights permitting SCB Water's continued unaltered operation of the project. If there are any questions, Mr. Guillermo Frias of Best and Krieger is also here this evening. And with that, I give this back to you, President Martin.
Thank you, Ms. Jacob. President Martin, are you ready to run the meeting?
Yeah, Vice President Ozahoski, would you continue for a moment while I get settled here?
Absolutely. Before we move on to directors, we're going to see if there's any public comments in person or virtually. Madam Secretary, are there any?
There are neither.
Okay. Directors, questions, comments on the presentation?
Director Colley has his hand up.
Director Colley, you're recognized.
All right. Thank you. Appreciate it. I've read the cited case and read over the documents with some care, and I conclude that the documents say that we hold title to the property, which is to say that we own it in fee. Of course, there is no deed. The court doesn't use deeds because it didn't own the property and it couldn't transfer the property to us from itself. So it used an order, and that order provides us title to the property. So I think first that's unambiguous. I don't know if counsel wants to dispute whether or not the documents that the court provided us do not say that we have title. I don't know. Should I phrase that as a question, or shall I get agreement on that first?
Mr. Frias, would you respond to Director Colley?
Sure. I'd like to point out two things. There is a final order, an amended final order that were entered in this case that purport to grant title. Those documents in them of themselves are ambiguous. In the body of the final amended order, there is a suggestion that fee was transferred. This is what Woodside picked up on. This is what triggered Woodside's request, saying it seems that the final order is granting you fee. However, if you were to take a look at the legal descriptions and the plats that are attached to that final order of amended final order of condemnation, you'll see the property interest being described as an easement. Moreover, and this is where we begin to get into the weeds of eminent domain law, The document that controls is not the final order of condemnation, but rather the resolution of necessity. A condemning agency can never acquire more than what's stated in the resolution of necessity. So if your resolution of necessity says you're acquiring an easement, that's the full extent that you're allowed to acquire. There's a very well-settled case, it's called Bressy, that provides for that. So if there is any dispute between the ultimate judgment and final order of condemnation entered and the resolution of necessity, it is the resolution of necessity that would be considered the governing document. Now, why could there be this clash in this case? Or why is there this inconsistency? It may be possible that at the time of the eminent domain action, it started out as an eminent domain action to acquire easement with a resolution of necessity that unequivocally states it's acquiring an easement. And as the action progressed, somehow there was a settlement. And because of that settlement, it might have gone from the acquisition of an easement to the acquisition of fee, and that the parties may have agreed to that. However, because with the passage of time and the fact that the property has now been sold, there isn't a definitive track record or documents that would unequivocally establish that. So if Woodside were to challenge this, their position would be there is inherent inconsistency throughout the documents and the process, but the law is clear. We must be guided by the resolution of necessity. And that provides for the acquisition of an easement. Moreover, the declaration of counsel, which was submitted in support of that final order of condemnation and the amended final order of condemnation, clearly states that it was meant to acquire an easement. So even there, we have the agencies, your former interest holder saying, the attorney saying, we're acquiring an easement. It's therefore a very ambiguous situation. And I don't think that a court would necessarily agree that the amended final order of condemnation is clear in granting the agency fee for all of the reasons that I've stated.
All right, counsel, I'd hope that we get a short answer to my initial question, but I will try to respond to the various things that you've explained. It seems like your position is that the agency could never have negotiated a purchase because it initially started with a resolution of necessity. I don't think that Bressy says that. I don't think that the law would require that. I think that would be an absurd result. I think that in negotiation over this property, the parties were free to negotiate any kind of a settlement that they wanted to. And I don't think, when I read Bressy, and I have, I don't think that Bressy says in any way, shape, or form that the parties are restricted from negotiating a sale in fee or transferring title to the property. I don't know, you know, if you could point to any language in Bressy that says that the parties cannot negotiate something more than is found in the statement of necessity, but I cannot find that.
That is correct. Bressy stands for the simple proposition that the resolution of necessity describes what's acquired. It does not preclude a condemning agency from subsequently negotiating the acquisition of property, both within the eminent domain action and outside of the eminent domain action. The problem that we have here is that there's no clear evidence of what exactly was negotiated, because counsel for the agency clearly stated that this was for the acquisition of a subterranean easement in support of the final order of condemnation and final order of amended condemnation. So although the parties may have been free to negotiate an altered acquisition, there is no evidence that they unequivocally did so. There's a suggestion that they might have done so, but there's also a strong suggestion that they didn't, based on declaration of counsel, based on the discrepancies of the documents. And so we're stuck with this ambiguity. And the proposed resolution, the reason I think it's been recommended is that it exchanges this ambiguous title for the certainty of an easement that allows the unaltered and continued operation of the project. There would be no difference, no change in what the agency does with the property and what it will do with it in the future.
All right. Am I right to continue?
Yes.
Go ahead, David Colley.
Okay. So I've also read the declaration. Okay. And the declaration merely states this case involved the acquisition of a subterranean easement and related temporary construction easements for the construction of CLWA San Canyon pipeline. That's an accurate statement. The way this whole thing started was seeking an easement. Didn't end up that way. And nothing suggests in this declaration that paragraph 3 suggests that's where it ended up. So where it ended up is that we hold title. Now I grant you the fact that there's a map that identifies an area as an easement, but I don't think that any court would say that the map is somehow superior to the words of the order and the legal description of the property that we acquired title to. As far as our ability to maintain the pipeline, we own the property and we're allowed to put pipelines in our property. I think there's no question about that. And so my suggestion is that we own the property, and that I also would point out that the developer that has an interest in purchasing the property, I'm not even sure what their standing would be. The suggestion that we would have some kind of a lawsuit with them, I don't know that somebody who's seeking to purchase a property would have standing in a court in order to quiet title. I don't know that even exists, but I would think that the current owner that's attempting to sell the property might want to file an action to quiet title. And I guess they'd be welcome to, but I think they would lose. And I suggest that if one of these parties wants to purchase this property from us, we should negotiate a sale. And we could certainly, in that negotiation, get an easement as a condition of that sale. So it's clear to me, in conclusion, that we own the property, title is in our name, and we have the ability to sell it, and we have the ability in that sale to put an easement on the property. And that's what I would prefer that we do. Thank you.
Thank you, Director Colley. Ms. Jacob, Mr. Fries, a response?
I think that it's a business decision on the part of the agency. I believe that there is ambiguity in the documents. I believe that if there were challenge, it's not with complete certainty that the agency would prevail, and that the proposed solution, although it may not result in a monetary positive for the agency, would allow the project to continue unaltered. But it is a business decision and a policy decision for the agency and its directors to consider.
Can I
respond to that? Mr. Mayo?
I want question. Recognized?
President Martin, you're recognized.
Thank you. And by the way, for the record, Director Cooper and myself were back in the boardroom, having arrived in the parking lot during the presentation by staff on this item. But I would like to ask, and we do have Courtney Mail here, and we have Christina online. This item was considered in engineering and operations and received no objection to moving forward as recommended action by staff. I would like to know if the recommended action actually results in the agency receiving what they require to have to maintain and operate that pipeline.
I will go ahead and answer that. We do get an easement. This is traditionally how we would handle pipeline projects where we go cross country or through a property. We don't try to acquire those in fee. We mostly try to acquire. We have a few that are in fee, but mostly we go with easements to manage and maintain our pipelines.
And I would like to know what is to be gained by continuing to pursue Director Holly's recommended path, given the ambiguity has been explained by our legal counsel, based on just standing on a principle that I believe legal counsel believes has not been established. So is there anything to be gained by this? I would ask our legal counsel to weigh in on this as well as Courtney.
I would defer to Ed Colley, Director Colley. I believe that he is requesting, as he stated, that we would be pursuing a financial gain by selling the property to the developer in exchange for an easement on the same parcel.
Operations-wise, there is nothing that the agency will do with the property that is different, whether it be a fee or an easement. So operations-wise, it's the same.
Very good. It's my position then that we continue with the recommended action, as it doesn't appear to be anything to gain by continuing to spend legal counsel money. Oh.
Does that conclude your...
You want to call on Director Armitage?
Director Armitage, go ahead.
Thank you. So I think what Director Colley might be getting to, and the question that I had, and I know we spoke a little bit about this, is it sounds like from when I listened to the Engineering and Operations Committee meeting and this discussion that took place there, that CLWA did pay an amount for this property, right? And so I think what maybe is the question is, are we giving this value away? What is the value of this property? I know operations wise, we still retain the ability to do what the agency needs to do, but are we just handing over the value of this property to the developers and just walking away from it? I think that's the concern we're trying maybe to get to.
Yeah, and
I'm sorry.
We would pay for an easement as well. We do when we're obtaining, property rights or obtaining easements, we have to purchase those. We go through an appraisal process in order to gain the right to use that property in the exact same way we would with a fee. There can be a difference between fee and easement for a piece of property. Usually that is a nominal difference between the two because our easements fully encumber the land. You are not allowed to build on it. You are not allowed to do most actions on that property without permission or some encroachment agreement from us. So with it fully encumbered, it has virtually the same value. And I'm pretty sure Mr. Frias could confirm that as well.
That's exactly what I was about to say. Because our easements or the agency's easements are so complete, there's very little residual value left to the property because the property owner simply can't do anything with it. In this case, if we were to grant fee to Woodside, Woodside wouldn't be able to do anything at all because it would be encumbered with the easement, which raises the question of why does Woodside even want it if that's the case? Well, the reason for that is because they're interested in obtaining financing and loans for the project. and it would help them to have fee to the entire property. But if we were to value the property, the residual value that we would be giving away in terms of fee, it would be nominal because we'd be giving them fee and be getting an easement that doesn't allow Woodside to do anything with it, but to allow us, or the agency, I should say, to operate its pipeline.
Thank you, Mr. Frias. Ms. Jacob?
And I'd just like to interject also, so the underlying fee owner that's showing is because of all of this ambiguity, there is ambiguity on the title as well. So it's showing a different underlying fee owner, which adds to, you know, this ambiguity. We do have this, you know, this eminent domain document that shows up on the title, but it's, there's still not clarity. So this is the opportunity to be able to, as Mr. Frias has said, take this very ambiguous concept and make it very clear what our rights are.
Thank you, Ms. Jacob. Director Armitage, you have a comment, question?
Yeah, thanks. Two follow-up questions. Thank you. One question is, if challenged, what are we looking at in terms of legal costs versus what CLWA paid for the property, or I guess what the value would be today? And then the second question is, can you go back to the map that's titled, the page of the slideshow that's titled Woodside Metro Walk Project? Could you show us specifically where the easement is within that red boundaried area?
Yeah, from that slide, if you look to the right side of the slide, there's a very light blue line that crosses the property that is shown, and that's where our pipeline sits. And the 40-foot easement encompasses that pipeline on either side. It's approximately 20 feet on either side. So on the right-hand side, you can see a very faint, thin blue line that shows our pipeline. The blue lines on this map are all water lines.
Okay, so looking at the drawing on the left, that's their proposed development.
Yeah, and it also shows a line that comes through that alignment and is their parking area. They have paved parking and drive aisles where our pipeline would go.
Okay, I mean, so, I mean, this shows that this is a very buildable space for them, right?
As in parking lot and drive aisles, yes. They will have asphalt and they will have to do an encroachment for the curbs, but that's pretty routine. We would normally grant that type of encroachment so long as we didn't have to replace the curbs in the future.
Okay. And then in terms, my other question in terms of if challenged.
And I will.
Could you estimate?
I will pass that to
Mr. Frias, yeah.
Yes, it's clients always want to know, can you give us an estimate of how much the litigation would cost? And an attorney always says it's very difficult because it depends to what extent they're going to fight the action, how the action develops, and what is the ultimate conclusion of it. If it's a matter that's solved at the beginning, it could be relatively cheap. If it goes all the way to a jury trial, it could easily exceed the $160,000 or so that was paid for the property. But we've got to keep in mind that when we talk about the value of how much was spent to acquire the property, we speak of it in fee, thinking that somehow the fee would have greater value than what we would have paid as an easement, right? We're thinking it's almost a visceral reaction. Well, we paid fee. We paid to acquire fee. Therefore, we must have paid more than what we paid for an easement. But that's not the case. In our situation, in the agency's situation, most of the time, what is paid for the easement tends to equal the value of the fee. Again, because there's very little residual value left after. So in negotiating, if we were to try to negotiate the sale of the property, and trying to balance what could we gain in consideration to what was spent and what would we get in terms of the easement, the numbers are already sunk costs. We've already paid for this. And the amount that we paid doesn't necessarily help us in determining whether we acquired fee or we acquired easements. This is a discussion that I have with our clients all the time, because they authorize an eminent domain action, get a pre-condemnation appraisal for an easement, but somehow they're looking at it and says, well, wait a minute, this valuation is for fee. And as I mentioned, that's, and as has been mentioned, that's because there's little residual value and therefore little difference between, oftentimes between easements and fee.
Thank you, Mr. Rios. Any other questions, comments from directors? Madam Secretary, I'm not able to see the board.
Oh, okay. Peter, I have a question, or rather a comment.
President Martin, go ahead.
All right. I think the point has been made that when you acquire a permanent easement for a pipeline, with all the restrictions that go with it, you basically have removed the value of the property to the owner of the overall owner in fee of the land, as he cannot have any future use of it outside of the restriction that we have put on there. And so I know, Christina, you're our right-of-way expert, but it's been my experience is similar to what our legal counsel says. When you acquire a permanent easement, it's very close to the cost and fee of the property for those very reasons. And so I don't find that there's anything to be gained by challenging the ownership of this land. We've already negotiated, or at least discussed a settlement of this that will provide at no further cost to either party, other than costs we've already spent on legal counsel's assistance in this, to resolve the matter and move forward. So that would be my position.
Vice President Ozolowski, Director Colley has his hand up.
Director Colley, you're recognized.
So, yeah, certainly we have a new assertion that wasn't made in the packet. It's new information that this property, the residual value of the property after the easement, will be something relatively small. I'm not sure anybody suggested it yet that it's zero. Talking about two-thirds of an acre in the Santa Clarita Valley, generally property in the Santa Clarita Valley, particularly in the Sand Canyon area, is pretty high priced. I think this developer's ability to put parking in this area is a substantial benefit. The folks that will ultimately review this project and approve it are going to demand that there be a certain amount of parking, and being able to use the parking on this two-thirds of an acre is certainly a benefit to the developer. I think that it would be reasonable, rather than just having a hand-waving argument, that generally the value goes way down when there's an easement for a pipeline, that maybe we could have somebody who has some expertise in this area provide us a more definitive value. And once we have that information, if it is zero, and then bring it back, and I'll certainly, if there's no value to the property, then I would not mind giving it away. But if there is a residual value, I think that we could and should not give it to the developer for free. I think that asking for compensation for that residual value makes sense. So I think the other comment that was made that is important is that we own the land, and therefore there is no impediment currently to our operating the pipeline. We have the pipeline. It's there. We own the land above and around it. We can continue to operate our pipeline. And if somebody chooses to challenge our ownership of that land, I mean, it would just be a silly expense for them, in my view. Yes, anybody can sue. The suggestion was made that nothing is certain, and in the law, there is nothing certain. Any lawyer will tell you that anybody can sue anybody for anything at any time, and that it certainly exists here. But the fact that we have title to the land
pretty much the evidence code says that if we hold title to the land, that we hold full beneficial title to the land. That's what the California law says. So I think that my suggestion then to go forward would just be to ask a real estate professional to provide us a number on what this property is worth, the residual value, and we might even give it away a little bit less than that. That might be a, you know, but it'd certainly be a way to start the negotiation and not start with just giving the property away.
Thank you, Director Colleen. Ms. Jacob?
Yes, thank you. So I'd just like to make a couple of points to speak to that. So because the title is not clear, the title is not showing us as the underlying fee owner, which means that the current owner has been paying the property taxes on this property. And that's part of the ambiguity of the title is that there has been this happening and it hasn't been free and clear. There has been the financial of the property taxes to consider as well. So by taking that into account, we do have that financial perspective to take into account as well. Mr. Frias, I don't know if you want to speak to that. I know that we've had that you have a perspective on that as well.
Sure. The tax consequence of this is an issue to be considered. It's not as great as perhaps the issue of ambiguity and the actual potential liability in an inverse condemnation action or a quiet title action and resulting attorney's fees. But what Christina is alluding to is the fact that because this has never been quite clear, the current owner has been paying taxes on the entirety of the property and hasn't gotten it apportioned. That may or may not pose a problem for us. But going forward, with regards to the new owner, this is an opportunity to also settle that issue. Because under the agreement, they would be basically indemnifying and agreeing to waive all tax issues. I don't think it's a big consideration, but it is something that's out there. With regards to getting an appraisal of the property, what we would do is, if that's how the agency would like to proceed, you get an appraisal for the fee interest and you get an appraisal for the easement. Because when we talk about selling them the rights and fee, we also got to remember that as part of those negotiations, we've got to get an easement back, right? So not only we've got to exchange property rights. It's not just a matter of the finances or the money involved. And so the appraisal would have to take that into account. It wouldn't just be evaluation of what the agency presently owns in fee. What's the fee value of that in Santa Clarita? I'm sure it's very valuable. But we already have our pipeline there. And once we give that fee away for whatever amount we give it to, we've got to take an easement back and we've got to pay for that easement. And I suspect that there's a strong possibility that an eminent domain appraiser would consider that to be a wash because you're giving away fee and you're getting something that's right back that's fully encumbered for the same specific use. But that's something that can definitely be explored if the board would like to go in that direction.
Vice President Ozahosky, Director Cooper has a question.
Director Cooper, you're recognized.
Thank you, Vice President Ozahosky. Director Cawley, I appreciate the interest that you've taken in this and the work that you've done on it. And the concerns that you have, I appreciate those. But what I hear are a couple of professionals, that one is a right-of-way professional, that's what her job is, and that's what she came to this agency specializing in, and an attorney that specializes in this, that is telling us that there's enough ambiguity in this that is telling us nobody's sure who owns the property. We own an easement, and we own 40 feet wide easement going through that piece. And when I look at what it is that they want to do there, which is to pave over and put some parking spaces on top of it, that's great. That protects our pipeline. It doesn't, nobody's planting trees on top of it, which we would not allow, but it protects our pipeline. So I think what we got was the value that we were looking for as CLWA in the easement, and we're getting additional protection in this development that's going in. So I'm very comfortable with what staff's recommendation is in this. I see it's very confusing, and I see you and seeing it in one direction, and I can see the attorney seeing it in another direction. And with that, I would have to go with our attorney, who is a specialist in that, as well as our right-of-way agent. So I would make the motion that we approve staff recommendation.
Thank you, Director Cooper. Do I hear a second or any other comments, questions from directors?
I'll second it, Vice President Rozowski.
Before we call the roll, any other comments, questions? Okay, Madam Secretary, please call the roll.
Director Cooper or Director Colley has his hand up again, Vice President.
My apologies, Director Cooper. I can't quite see you. Go ahead.
Yeah, I understand. It's kind of awkward here. I understand, and I guess I think it would be a fairly simple and low cost ask to simply have an appraisal done on the residual value of the property that we own and transferring it over to this developer in fee with a new easement on the property as is provided in the board packet. It should not take a lot of time. It shouldn't take a lot of money. And it may well profit our ratepayers some amount of money that they should have. They own this land, and it would not be particularly difficult. And the developer would be free then to negotiate with us for a price to buy the land in fee.
I would certainly agree with you if we own the property, but we don't know that we own the property.
Well, I have documents. So
I think that the attorney has told us that it's not known who owns the property. One party has been paying taxes on it. If it was ours, so there wouldn't have been any taxes on it. And in the end, I think he told us that that the cost of the property would be the same as the cost of the easement, is that it would be a wash because there is no value to the property once we have an easement on it because nobody can build on it. That's what I was hearing from him.
Okay, I heard from attorneys that that's a likely outcome, that it would have no value. Okay, but Director Cooper, you've suggested that we ought to be listening to professionals in a particular area, and neither the attorney nor our right-of-way specialist are experts in real estate, and having an appraisal done by somebody with expertise in real estate would provide us a better answer to that question than the non-experts that you're suggesting we shouldn't listen to. So it's not a difficult thing to do. As far as who owns the land, I have documents here in front of me that tell me that we own the land. I know that staff talks about title as if there's a title document. Title to land isn't done in a title document the way a motor vehicle is. Deeds are a document that can transfer title. But in this case, there is, of course, no deed because it was transferred to us by a court order. But those court orders are
in my reading, very unambiguous. They tell us that we have title to the property. So it's not difficult to ask, to just simply ask staff to have the property appraised and the residual value after we put the pipeline easement in. And if there is no residual value and staff comes back and has a professional appraisal that says that, then I will be all in favor of giving it away.
Dr. Bronstein, you recognize.
I was wondering if this is time sensitive or if there's any rush on this, or if it is okay to just table this and push it to another month from now. I'll be honest, I'm a little bit uneasy about this whole situation going down. And at the same time, even if there's no value for the person, then once we have an easement, I still don't see why we should be giving it away. As far as I'm concerned, let it be dirt and let it, the water, have more area to, you know, recharge in instead of paving over it. So if there's no rush, I would suggest that we table it and bring it back in a month and with all the additional information. I am weary a bit about the fact that we haven't been paying property taxes on it. I think that might come to bite us in the butt, but I would rather get all the information, make everybody comfortable with this. And I'd love to hear, though, what our
opposing counsel for Woodside has indicated that they would like to close the transaction in this month. And we schedule this hearing because of that timing issue, that there's a nice, the timing would coincide and they'd get property for, they get title to everything that they're seeking to acquire. But with that said, each time I've reached out to opposing counsel, there hasn't been a sense of urgency. And so we had talked about having this hearing to resolve the matter. And I'm sure that Woodside would like it to be so. But I have to be honest, they've not been knocking on my door to have the matter resolved immediately. I don't know how they would take the news of us having a continuance of a month or so or an appraisal to determine what we would give in terms of fee and then what we would have to pay to get back in the easement. And would that be a wash?
Thank you, Mr. Frias. Director Bronstein, does that conclude your question, comment?
Yeah, I guess so.
Thank you. Ms. Jacob?
Yes, thank you. So I'd just like to speak to that, Director Bronstein. So the amount of time and the cost to get the appraisal, so it would take approximately 4 to 6 weeks, and the cost could be $4,000 to $5,000 ballpark. I just want to point out that could potentially be more than the value of the easement. So I just want to clarify that. In regards to the property taxes, so that does also give us an opportunity to clarify. By going this route, it would allow us to clarify exactly for future property taxes. As Mr. Frias mentioned, the future owner there, you know, it would be the passed on to the next owner to be paying the property taxes on the full parcel, not just the easement. So I just wanted to clarify those two items to make sure that they were clarified.
Thank you, Ms. Jacob. And just to make a comment to all the directors, I mean, we are interested in having easement rights, and the solutions presented by staff does give us that and does clarify all these ambiguities regarding fee versus easement. this time we do have a motion and we do have a second. Before we call the roll, are there any other questions or comments?
There are. Director Armitage had her hand up, and so did Director Marks.
Director Armitage, you are recognized.
Thank you. So, sorry, more follow-up questions, because as I listen to more more of the discussion. I have more follow-up questions. So I guess A, in terms of the paying taxes issue, were we supposed to be paying taxes on this? No. Okay. Okay. And then thank you. And then I guess if we go the route of getting an appraisal, what do we do with that? So I guess my question is, how does this transaction get recorded in our financial records?
I'm sorry. In terms of, I don't quite understand the question. What do you mean that the cost of the appraisal?
The cost of the appraisal, and then if we end up doing this transaction as recommended, I guess I'm having a hard time with it because there's no value being placed on there's no dollar figure attached to this that I think is making some of us struggle too. So I imagine this has to be recorded in some way if we are giving the property. Okay. Go ahead.
So yeah, this isn't something, because like you said, there's no financial to it. We're just simply correcting a document. So we will record an easement with current language, and then we will, I think on her slide, she had the correct language. I don't want to mess up the language from the slide, but we will correct the action and the ambiguity by effectively saying we have no interest in the land except for this easement that you've dedicated to us. And we will perfect our easement rights across that property. So there is no financial transaction. It is tradition to get, when a development is going through, if we didn't have this pipeline and we needed this pipeline, we would ask for this easement with our full rights, and it would be given to us without a financial transaction. So it doesn't hit our finances.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Mayo. Ms. Jacob, you had your hand up.
Oh, no, I'm sorry. Mr. Mayo, answer the question.
Thank you. Director Armitage, does that conclude your comment question?
Yes, thank you.
Director Marks, you are recognized.
Because I had a similar question about whether or not we got any tax liability, which I didn't think we did. And we don't in either case, if we own it or if we're an easement that we have. I guess my concern after hearing presentations are that what I'm hearing is effectively the value of the easement that we're left with is essentially the fee value of the property. I think we are potentially spending a significant amount of time and money and legal fees and easement or appraisal fees that there may not be. What I'm hearing staff say is there's probably not going to be much value to us if we do determine that we have a fee interest in the property versus an easement. So that concludes my question comment.
Thank you, Director Marks. Yeah, I echo the same sort of sentiment. It does clear up this ambiguity, and we do get easement rights on that property. You know, that's the ultimate goal here. Any other questions, comments? Director Peterson, you are recognized.
Yeah, Director Marks, you kind of sum up my reason for allowing this to be put forward to the board during the engineering committee meeting. I did give some history a little bit about this easement probably, that it probably kind of stated really well by Director Colley, even without hearing that comment I made. It was a very situation during that construction process of putting up a very major facility in the valley, and we were up against adding easements with a contractor right at the door, putting the pipeline in that area. So some negotiations went ahead and with the property owner at that time.
So some of those things have been falling through the cracks, as we've seen here. So my thought at the engineering committee meeting and listening to the presentation is that it is kind of like going to be a wash in money, but we can spend a lot of time at it if in the future if we still want to try to perfect our rights there as a fee property. So that is my comments to add to the group.
Thank you, Director Pearson. Are there any comments, questions from directors? Madam Secretary, can you confirm?
There is not.
Madam Secretary, please call the vote.
As I call your name, please state how you vote. Director Peterson.
Yes.
Director Cooper.
Yes.
Director Armitage.
Yes.
Director Marks.
Yes.
Director Bronstein.
No.
Director Colley.
No.
Vice President Ozahosky.
Yes.
President Martin.
Yes.
This item does pass, and that's resolution number SCV-338. To go back to the consent calendar, that would be resolution number SCV-339 for item 5.6. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Secretary. Thank you, directors, for a lively discussion. Before we move to item number 6, President Martin, are you ready to...
thank you, Vice President Husky, for taking those 5 items. I appreciate the discussion, and I think we did the right thing. But let's move on to item 6, action item for approval. We have one item on the calendar, on the agenda tonight. It's approve 1, adopting a resolution for a construction contract with J. Vega Engineering Incorporated. 2, a purchase order to Philippin Engineering and Construction Management and Inspection Services for the Dickinson Waterline Improvements Project. And 3, finding that the contract agreement is exempt from CEQA pursuant to CEQA Guidelines Section 15282 and alternatively Section 15302. Our presenter tonight is Yoganathan. I think
thank you, we referred President to Martin. You. Good evening, President Martin, members of the board, and members of the public. I'm Yoganathan Thirumaran, and I go by Maran, and I'm the project manager for the Dickinson Drive Waterline Improvements Project. We have an item in front of you this evening to recommend approval of adopting a resolution for a construction contract and authorizing a purchase order for construction management and inspection services and find a contract agreement that is exempt from CEQA for this project. Next slide, please. This is the location map of the project. The project is located in the northern part of the city, just north of New Hall Ranch Road between Smythe Drive and Decorah Drive, right next to Valencia High School. Next slide, please. We are basically replacing approximately 2,100 feet of 14-inch PVC pipe with 16-inch ductile iron pipe. There have been a few leaks in and near this section in the recent years, which we repaired through agency's emergency contracts. And it does get expensive, costing a lot of money to fix the leaks, also disruption to service due to the nature of emergency projects. This replacement project would help alleviate the waterline breaking and disruption issues in this area. This work also requires city encroachment permit from City of Santa Clarita to perform the work, which actually requires this work to be done during nighttime. So all this work will be nighttime. This work will also be coordinated with Valencia High School and Legacy Christian Academy. And we actually have reached out to them last week and they are aware of it. And they're aware of the project. And we also will accommodate their needs, and we'll continue to work with them during construction to accommodate their schedule. I also want to mention that our agency engineering inspection group will be working in conjunction with Philippine Engineering to perform the construction inspection. The consultant will be paid on a time and material basis, so using our inspection for certain tasks would help us save some money. Right now, our inspection is pretty busy and would not be able to accommodate a full-time inspection on this project. As you see here on this slide, this project also satisfies our strategic plan objective B2.1. Next slide, please. The construction bidding for this project basically followed our standard agency bidding process. The project was advertised on Planet Bids from late November last year to February this year. In addition, it also was advertised in the local newspaper, The Signal, on three different dates, as you see here on the slide. Bids were electronically opened on February 1st at 2 p.m. And as you see here on this table, we received two bids, and not too far apart, between $1.9 million to $2.3 million. The lowest bid from J. Vega Engineering seems to meet all the requirements for the construction, for the contract documents, and their bid is also very close to the engineer's estimate. At least from my knowledge, I think we haven't done any work with them yet. So this would be the first project the agency and J. Vega Engineering to work together. However, I also want to mention that they are a licensed Class A general engineering contractor and DIR registered. They have fully completed the bid form and have been determined as the lowest responsible bidder. Next slide, please. Thank you. This slide here shows the consultant selection process for the construction management and inspection services. This is no different than our standard approach in selecting a consultant. We followed our standard process of obtaining proposals from our on-call consultants. We received two proposals from Philippine Engineering and MWH. As we always do, staff from engineering and operations did the evaluation based on the criteria listed here, which also includes the availability of the consultant. Philippine Engineering was selected after our evaluation meeting last year. I also want to point out that we used a QBS qualifications-based selection procurement process to select this consultant, which is the agency's standard approach for selecting consultants for these types of services. Next slide, please. This slide here shows you a brief project schedule. Today, on March 21st, we are here this evening presenting in front of the board, requesting for approval. If the board approves, we will be issuing the NTP in April. With 6 months of construction, we expect the project to be completed around October this year. Next slide, please. The recommendation for this item is that the engineering and operations committee recommend that the board of directors adopt the attached resolution for a construction contract with J. Vega Engineering in an amount not to exceed $1,909,510.50, and authorize general manager to execute a work authorization with Philippine Engineering for an amount not to exceed $300,000 for construction management and inspection services for the Dickerson Drive Waterline Improvements Project. Find the contract agreement exempt from CEQA pursuant to CEQA guidelines, section 15282, which is the installation of maintenance, repair, restoration, removal, or demolition of an existing pipeline that does not exceed 1 mile in length, and alternatively, exempt from CEQA under CEQA guidelines section 15302, which is replacement or reconstruction of existing utility systems and facilities involving negligible or no expansion of capacity. This concludes my presentation. Thank you. And with that, I'll bring it back to you, President Martin.
Thank you, Marin, for your presentation. Before we go to board discussion and questions, I don't have any public comment cards from members of the public who are in attendance. Do we have any public comment online, April?
We do not.
Very good. We can open it up to board questions about the project or any comments. Director Armitage.
Thank you. Thank you for your presentation, Mr. Marin. As I know this was addressed, but I just want to make it very clear, as a parent who drives past Valencia High School multiple times a day, you know, my initial concern was with the impact on traffic to Valencia High School and Legacy Academy in the area. So I was very glad to hear you specify, and you also talked about it at engineering and operations, that this work will be done at night, and that you are communicating with both schools. So I appreciate hearing that. So as long as that holds true, I think that's great. I do have a question about the construction timeline. You noted it was April through October. Is it going to take that long, or is it padded for flexibility?
So yes, that is the duration that's given for the contractor, but that they won't, we account for submittal reviews and towards the end. So that physically, they might not be there the whole time. It'll probably be a lot less, but it includes a submittal review and things like that. So at the beginning.
Yeah, so you'll have pipe procurement. You'll have submittals that are submitted starting in April after we give a notice to proceed. Typically, that can take 2 to 3 months. The actual construction is probably closer to the 3 month window that will be on the latter part of the project. And that's assuming we can get all the materials we need in that first 3 months. We'll see with ductile iron delays if that's really the case, but we're going to do our best to make sure. And I know we've checked on some of that, and we're hoping we have that available.
Okay. Just because I'm sure you know that summer break is from the beginning of June to the beginning of August. So I guess ideally, if all the stars align, that would be the best time to get that done.
Yeah, we would like to get it all done. I think in all likelihood, we will be approaching October for completion.
Okay.
I think that's a realistic completion timeline, but we probably won't start until sometime during the summer. So we won't be starting in April.
Yeah. Okay.
As far as physical construction, although there will probably be potholing, dig alert, people out there marking up the street to verify what the plans have stated.
Okay. And then just lastly, I appreciated the question that President Martin asked in E&O about whether or not there would be any disruption to service of water for the schools during that time. And the answer was no. So I was glad to hear that too. So thank you.
Yep. Any questions on this side? Director Collins.
Yeah, I just quick question is the night work. Is the city demanded that, or is that something we volunteered for?
Yeah, the city required.
The city required, yes.
Okay. All right. I would kind of echo the comments that high school break is basically June and July. And it would be nice if we could have completed this project over that summer break, because really, other than the high school traffic, there's not. Yeah, twice a day, Dickinson is nuts. And other than those times when the high school is starting and ending, traffic along Dickinson is minimal. But it would have been nice if we could have figured out a way to use the summer break, and certainly the school would be willing, the school district, if they knew in advance, they could schedule Valencia not to be a summer school site, and they consolidate summer schools anyways and could have accommodated us. But
yeah, and the city required it regardless, including over the summer. We did have that conversation.
Yeah, they're not spending their money.
Director Cooper. I understand the concern, and I think what the goal is in this is that there would be night work, and then it would be plated over so that the street has access, plenty of access during the daytime. So hopefully there would be minimal disruption to the high school.
Director Brunstein.
I just want to say that I'm excited that we're doing 2,100 feet of this PVC pipe, because I think we keep on seeing that area gets hit so often with leaks. So, you know, and I think you guys answered all my concerns. So thank you very much.
Very good. Any other further questions from the board? And I would entertain a motion, perhaps from the committee chair, if you'd like to make it.
This was reviewed in depth at committee, and I would make the motion to accept staff's recommendation.
Very good. Do we have a second on this item?
I'll second.
Director Brownstein. So we have a motion and a second. Madam Secretary, please call the roll.
As I call your name, please state how you vote. Director Peterson.
Yes.
Director Cooper.
Yes.
Director Marks.
Yes.
Director Armitage.
Yes.
Director Colley.
Yes.
Director Bronstein.
Yes.
Vice President Zahosky.
Yes.
President Martin.
Yes.
Thank you. This item does pass, and that's resolution number SCV-340.
Very good. Thank you, Maran. Thank you, staff. Thank you, board. Let's move on to item 7, General Manager's Report on Activities, Projects, and Programs. Mr. Stone.
Okay, thank you. A couple of items. I guess three. First off, last week, the US EPA released a proposal for the long-anticipated maximum contaminant levels, or MCLs, for two PFAS chemicals, PFOA and PFOS. Both are proposed to be set at 4 parts per trillion. This is significantly lower than the current state response level of 10 and 14. So staff have been rapidly assessing what the implications of that are for our system. As you know, we're currently treating or have offline one or the other, all wells that are exceeding the state response levels. With this action, which would currently become effective in January 2024, it's initially estimated that we could have an additional 10 wells offline or impacted, along with the potential production of about 11,000 gallons per minute if all were running consecutively, and potential supply impact of a little over 17,000 acre feet of groundwater production. Our PFAS strike team started the discussion on this Friday morning, and we'll be conducting a similar process as when the response levels were set by the state and then when they were reduced, to evaluate those impacts, look at potential system constraints and remedies, water resource portfolio impacts during the time these additional wells would be unavailable to provide supply, and the estimated cost to add treatment and return these sources to service. So we'll come back to the board at a later date with more information, but it's fairly significant development. I feel very confident in our team to be able to give us the best strategies we can to deal with it. But it will, for perspective, the two PFAS projects we've completed, the NWELLS project and the Valley Center well, have restored enough production to be about a little over half of what we're going to lose in January. So we've dug ourselves partway out of the hole, and the hole is going to get a little deeper before we can dig ourselves all the way out. Also note that EPA is considering another standard, a combined standard where they would take four PFAS chemicals of concern and establish a kind of combined limit using a formula for that. So that's a little further out. But one of the things we'll be doing is looking at what our current sampling data indicates and what our treatment data indicates. And that bench study that the board approved not too long ago will come in handy for evaluating that question as well. So I'm sure Captain PFAS will come back and give a much more exciting presentation about this in a couple of months, but just wanted to get it on the radar, and you probably have heard about it, so you were probably curious as well. The other item, just note, kind of obvious, several of us were up in Sacramento for the KHTS road trip and just returned this evening from that. I thought it was a good trip. There are a lot of very interesting presentations on things related to our operations and things maybe related indirectly. For example, we had a really interesting discussion about electrified fleets and where fuel cells might really have a role in large, heavier duty applications or longer running applications. And also had Jennifer Pierre from the State Water Contractors, of which we are a part of that organization, came and spoke to our delegation and answered good tough questions about water projects and water storage. So it was a pretty good overall session and quite the hydrologic adventure getting back to the airport and getting underway, which included lightning. So it was quite fun. Turning to a much more serious note, as I shared in an email with the board yesterday, very sad to report, we lost one of our utility workers. Ray Ramirez passed away last week. He had been with the agency and the predecessor, Valencia Water Company, since 2014, I believe. Tonight, we will adjourn the meeting in his memory. And once we have information on arrangements and preferences from his family, of course, we will pass that along as appropriate. I'll just kind of paraphrase a little bit of what his supervisor wrote that we shared in an internal staff email for the record. You can't really say enough good things about Ray. He was just a genuinely nice guy. I have never heard a bad thing said about him or had him say a bad thing about anybody else. He was assigned to our USA group. That's the utility location specialists. So he interacted with a multitude of contractors and developers in the service area. He was a great resource for staff as he had a lot of tribal knowledge and was the go-to for locating needs. I think we all learned something from Ray in one form or another. And I know we say these things when something like this happens, but in this case, it is the gospel truth. He was an awesome person and will leave a tremendous void in our group. So just finish with that. Thank you. And that was Roger Hitchin who said those words.
Thank you, Mr. Stone. I don't have any public comment cards on this item. I will ask April when she gets back to her computer. Do we have any public comments online?
We do not.
All right, we can open up for any questions or comments from the directors. I don't see any hands raised, but I appreciate your comments on Mr. Ramirez, and we will definitely close this meeting appropriately. So we can now move on to item 8, committee meeting recap reports for informational purposes only. There are two reports that are included in your packet. I don't have any public comment cards on that. Are there any public comments online?
There is not.
Any questions from the board on those two reports that are in your packet? Very good. Seeing none, we can move on to item 9, President's Report. I'd like to update the board on the following meetings outside the agency conference events. United Water Conservation District open house and facilities tour is scheduled for March 29, starting at 9 a.m. If you still would like to attend, please let the board secretary know by 9 a.m. tomorrow. Waivers will need to be completed and submitted to the board secretary along with your RSVP. The AWA 31st Annual Water Symposium is being held on Thursday, April 20th at the Courtyard by Marriott in Oxnard. The DCA Alignment Tour is being held on April 26th in Sacramento. And I'll just add to that that while in Sacramento at the KSTS bus trip or Sacramento trip, I had the opportunity to talk to our newly elected assemblywoman, Assemblyman Chabot. And I asked April to extend an invitation to her to attend the alignment tour. And her staff is going to have her respond when she checks her schedule and see her availability. My point in that is I simply asked her if she supported the project, and she said she needed to know more about it. And so this will give her an excellent opportunity to know firsthand more about the project. So it's a good opportunity. I hope she accepts. The next item is the Southern California Water Coalition Quarterly Luncheon is being held on April 28th from 12 to 2 p.m. at the Wilson Creek Winery in Temecula. The next item, State of the County, is being held on May 31st, 11:30 at the Hyatt Regency. Upcoming board meetings, start time at 6 p.m., the regular board meeting on April 4th, and a regular board meeting on April 18th. Upcoming committee meetings held at Summit Circle in the EHSS boardroom at 5:30 p.m. is the April 6th Engineering and Operation, the April 12th Water Resources and Watershed Committee meeting, and the April 20th Public Outreach and Legislation. Upcoming committee meetings at Rio Vista boardroom, in this very boardroom, the April 17th Finance and Administration Committee meeting. That concludes the report for tonight. I don't have any public comment cards. Do we have any public comments online?
We do not.
Any questions or comments from the board? Seeing none, move on to Item 10, AB 1234 reports. There was one report that was in your packet and three reports that were posted to the website, emailed, and are at each of our spots. Does anyone have an additional AB 1234 report?
Director Marks. Yes, I attended a one-on-one meeting with General Manager Matt Stone on March 13th via Zoom.
Good. Thank you, Director Marks. Director Armitage.
Thank you. I attended the executive committee meeting of the Special Districts Association of North Los Angeles County on March 16th, virtually. We got an update from Chris Palmer of California Special Districts Association, or CSDA, about the efforts that CSDA is making with special districts to try and address the concerns that many agencies have about the California Air Resources Board's rule on transitioning to electronic vehicles and requesting some flexibility with that for agencies that have mid to large sized vehicles. And I know we just signed on a letter related to that. I know AQUA is organizing the water agencies, and CSDA is organizing kind of the other special districts around that effort. And the next general membership meeting is currently being planned for May 18th. It'll be in the Antelope Valley. So find a carpool buddy and save the date. There's going to be a speaker from LAFCO speaking to us about how LAFCO applies to special districts. Lunch will be provided. And then a survey. You should have seen a survey in your email in the last week or so. From Kathy Martin on behalf of our special district of North LA County, asking for input on if you haven't attended, why, and if you have any proposed topics or speakers. And we really, really, really look at that and rely on that to try to form future meetings that are of interest to everybody, because we want you to come. So please, if you haven't taken a moment to respond to that email, please do, because we really do use that information. And then lastly, the next executive committee meeting is scheduled for April 19th at 9 a.m. virtually. Thank you.
Thank you, Director Armitage. Any other? AB 1234, Director Cooper.
Thank you, President Martin. Yes, I have several that this last week or so has been pretty busy. Virtual meetings. On the 7th, Aqua Finance Committee, of which I'm a member. On the 13th is Aqua Infrastructure Task Force that I've been assigned to. And again, on the 17th, Aqua Infrastructure Task Force. And then the 20th and the 21st, yesterday and today, KHTS trip to Sacramento.
Very good. Director Brownstein.
On March 15th, I attended the Water Academy, and I was very, very, very pleased with what I saw. We had a lot of different people from different walks of life. I love the diversity. Wish there was a little bit more, maybe next time. But still, it was a great group of people. They asked good questions. I think they all wanted to learn. They were all there because they wanted to be there. So I thought that was really exciting. And I'm going to say that our staff kind of rocked it. They did a phenomenal, phenomenal job. They really, really did. I wish they had more time. That was my only real take from there, is that I wish they had more time, because the first, class talked about our water supply and conservation. And I think that that's such a fundamental piece of our whole Water Academy thing that I wish that, Sarah Flory could have spoken maybe a little bit longer without having to be rushed, but every single person there did such a phenomenal job. So thank you.
Thank you, Director Brownstein. I know we have some other KHTS bus trip reports. Director Ozahofsky, do you have one?
I do. Madam Secretary, do you see my raised hand?
Yes, I did. I was getting ready to say it, but President Martin jumped to it before I could say that you had your hand out.
That's right. He beat you to it. All right. So I have also attended the Sacramento road trip. And yes, we had some great speakers. It was great to meet with our newly elected assemblywoman, Pilar Chavio, and her team to discuss water issues. Also met with Senator Tony Atkins, Senator Pro Temp, Senator Josh Newman, co-chair of the Problem Solvers Caucus, a great caucus, if you ask me. And also today, I and General Manager Matt Stone had the pleasure of meeting Assemblywoman Megan Daly of the 1st District. This was an impromptu meet and greet arranged by our very own Dennis Albiani from California Advocates. A great conversation, and although short, it was nice to meet on the Capitol. Back to you, President Martin.
Thank you, Vice President Ozahofsky. I appreciate you and General Manager Stone splitting off from the other two of us at their board meeting so that we could be there for Jennifer Peters' presentation. So, and with that, I'll give my KHTS report. I also attended the KHTS Sacramento trip. I thought it was excellent. As usual, the bus tribe up gave us an opportunity to talk to our fellow Santa Claritans about what we're doing in water. And of course, there's great interest in water. And as I'll report in a moment, the drought was declared over by one of our state leaders, our very own state water contractor, General Manager Jennifer Pierre. But we had that opportunity last night to meet with Assemblywoman Chavo, Tom Lackey, Assemblyman Tom Lackey, and of course, Scott Wilk and some other elected officials. And it's really a great opportunity to get out and talk to the community about water. Really appreciate going. And just to say one more thing about Jennifer Pierre, she made a comment and I took it down on my notes when she, by the way, she personally said, I'm sick of the rain, so stop raining. She said, the drought's over, but we are in an perpetual state of water shortage. I had to follow up with that and ask what that meant. And basically, the changed conditions that we're living under during as a result of climate change and all the different conditions we face during wet and dry years, both probably means that we should always conserve. And I've always said we'd never have enough water to waste. And I think we should still keep the pedal to the metal on our conservation programs, because it may be wet this year, and of course it is. But be nice that we never have to worry about where our water is going to come from. So with that, that concludes my AB 1234. Are there any other reports tonight? Seeing none. We have any public comment, April?
We do not.
Very good. That concludes AB 1234 reports. And following that, we have item 11, closed session. We will be having a closed session item tonight. I'd like to advise that the board may stay on the Zoom webinar. Any board members or staff that are connected to the Zoom and are in closed session, please disconnect from Zoom. We will meet in closed session to discuss item 11.1. Members of the public and any staff may stay on the current line. And once closed session is over, the board will reconnect to Zoom webinar for closed session announcements and the remaining items on this agenda. Board members participating remotely, please disconnect from Zoom and join the Teams meeting. I'd like to advise the board now we will be taking a 5-minute break to set up for closed session, and we will reconvene as soon as we get the doors closed and be prepared for closed session. We are now on 5-minute recess.
Armitage.
We are back in open session. I'll go on to item 12, pass to Attorney Tom Bunch for closed session announcements.
Mr. President, members of the board met in closed session under section 54956.9 to consider the claim of Rosa Hernandez, and the board voted unanimously to reject the claim and turn it over to ACWA JPI.
Thank you, Mr. Bunch. We have a public comment on item 12?
We do not.
Very good. We can move on to item 13, director requests for future agenda items. Are there any requests for future agenda items? Seeing none, move on to item, 14. This is the sad part of our meeting tonight. As reported by Mr. Stone, we lost a member of the SCV Water family, someone who was very highly regarded, very highly thought of, very sad, but we will be adjourning in the memory of SCV Water Agency employee Ray Ramirez. Let me read you the certificate that is going to be presented to his family. On March 21, 2023, the Santa Clara Valley Water Agency Board of Directors adjourned its regular meeting in memory of your loved one. The agency extends its deepest sympathy and sincere condolences to you and your family. He signed by the president of the board. With that, we are adjourned. Thank you all.